Welcome back. Thanks for hanging in there with us after the break. And, of course, as always, I'd like to have you guys check us out on thevalleyoutdoors.com. Tons of interactive things that you can look at. Get into the rabbit hole and just immerse yourself.
Spend time there.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Fine.
And where it's else, fine. Ava, can we be found?
Facebook as well. You're already there. So give us a like.
That works.
A follow. All the good things.
Yeah, whatever. Tell us a story. Send us some pics
pictures,
and we'll put them up.
Yeah,
feel free to. Always like to see fish pictures or anything outdoors wise is always welcome. So check that out. So we came into the end of the first part of the show, talking a little bit about hair jigs. And in my opinion, it's probably one of the most amazing jigs that I've used in many, many, many years. I've been fishing on the tour, it's probably one of my number one go-tos. And what brought it up was I saw Steve Carney, who's a friend of mine on Outdoor News. He was talking about hair jigs and catching crappie on hair jigs and then walleye on hair jigs. And it's an absolutely versatile jig for multi-species fishing. And it brought me to the prime example. The previous week, I had fished with a regular jig and a crawler. I like an orange and a little bit of yellow. That's one of my favorite colors for fishing all around. What are you fishing for? I'm fishing for what I can catch.
Yep.
They fish really do like that. Doesn't really matter. But what I find is that the advantage in a hair jig is several fold. Number one is if you are relatively inexperienced in casting, you can cast a hair jig as hard as you want. You don't have bait on it. You don't have to have bait on it. And you can work it and really understand the jig fishing, but you don't have to have bait on it. So you're not throwing bait off if you have a leech or if you have a crawler, you're throwing the bait off
right.
If you throw it too hard. You don't have to worry about that. The fish will eat it regardless. Big thing there. So that's a good thing.
A big thing for me.
Yep.
I'm not a big bait fan.
And you don't have to get messy, you know, boat all crawlery. Now, can you add a crawler to your hair jig? Yes, you can. I'll get into that in a minute. So jigging, for the most part, and there's some deception out there, or maybe misconceptions is the best way to put it. People say, oh, you have to run the lightest jig you possibly can. You know what? I would say if you're starting out jig fishing, not to go that way. I would go the heavy enough jig where you can comfortably feel the bottom. And generally a quarter ounce jig is a solid weight for most everybody else. If you're looking 3/16 or maybe an eighth after that, if you're really getting to be good, or the current, if you're fishing a river or deeper water, you may want to shy away from that. But generally in a lake situation, an eighth, 3/16, that's going to be about where you want to be. And you can go that direction. Again, this is for pitching jigs to a structure or from a structure. So if you're on shore, you can pitch out, pull it back. So the point really is here, the hair allows a jig to have a slower fall than a standard jig. So it's able to be seen in the strike zone. The other thing, and hair jigs have many different types of hair. You can go a deer hair, you go marabou, you can go a tinsel type thing that people think would be kind of similar to a hair jig. Not the case, but I will say, this was from an experience I had at the Minneapolis Sports Show many years ago. And I was asking one of the guys that I was working with in the Normark Rapala booth. I said, what's up with the black jig? Seems to be a really good color. I'm just baffled in the reasoning behind it. And he asked me, he says, well, what type of hair are you using? I said, what's deer hair? And he gets a smile and he pulls me off to the side. He says, come here a second. So he literally grabs my arm and pulls me away from everybody else. It says, okay.
Like, we need to have a talk here.
Here's the deal. I have researched color at the University of Minnesota and what fish see. You're using deer hair and you have black. Two of the number one things you want to keep in mind. One, deer hair gives off a different UV ray or UV vision than does a marabou or other jig or other hair. I went, okay. And black, at depth, that black color allows you less light penetrating, but it looks like a leech or another whatever invertebrate at that point. that you're going to be able to have as a food source. And I'm like, starting to, I'm like, okay, now what? Do I have to whisper too? And, you know, it's almost like this is a top secret thing.
Sure.
And he said, just let you know, 2 years later, guess what? Rapala shows up and they release hair jigs and they're a deer hair jig. So his research was going into development of some key pieces of what they do. And they've got great hair jigs. Really, it's BMC. They make great, great product in normal jigs as well. So, but when you look at the pieces and parts that go into success when you're jig fishing, that's where hair comes in to a big, really a wide range of fish. The other day went out, striper. I got a bunch of stripers. I also caught sheephead, and then I got walleye, and I got a catfish, all on hair jigs. Now, what can you do to change up the hair jig if you think it's not, if you're not confident that the hair jig alone is going to work? Put on a piece of crawler. Couple things that it'll do. If you want to, slide it up under the hook further, because when you do that, it spreads that hair jig skirt out further and makes the fall of the jig even slower. So you can work an area more slowly if you're starting to catch a lot of fish, or if you think you're not getting enough fish, putting the crawler on there does create an attractant, and it will give you confidence to say, I'm not believing you, try it. And if you start catching fish, then try it without. Give yourself that the capability to have success. And more often than not, what you're going to find is that hair jig is going to be beyond amazing as far as what it can produce. Now, my number one color is a black hair jig. Black and white is also another that I do. Blue, royal blue. If it's sunny out, I'll do a royal blue with some tinsel in it. But perch is also good. You'll see there's some perch hair jigs that are out there as well. So don't be afraid to experiment. Try the hair jigs. You can vertical jig them. You can pitch them. The key is also a lift and drop. Let it sit, a lift and drop. If you're in extremely rocky areas, change the cadence up, not to let it sit. As soon as you feel that timing is it's going to hit bottom, just lift it up nicely, not yank it back, but really work the jig back if you're pitching to structure. And last but not least, when you're jig fishing, let that cast indicate to you what the break line is doing. And when you get a hit, where is that break line? Where is that active point, and where are they hitting that bait? If they're starting to hit it, you can feel it's at the break line. That should be a note to yourself. All right, I need to back up a little bit if they're coming close to the boat, or if they're not, you can move in closer to shore. Those are the pieces of the puzzle that you need to let the fish tell you, and let that bottom, as the jig bounces it, let that really give you an indication of what's happening on that side of the fence. So there you have it.
Jig fishing. All about it.
In a nutshell, you know, that's kind of the my favorite way to fish, period. Why? Because there's nothing like that thunk on the other end of the line. And it's like, you know what jig fishing is?
What?
Fishing in general. One jerk waiting for another jerk at the end of the line.
There you go. That's a good one.
Yeah, it's a sad thing, but you know.
But sad but true.
Top of the show, I brought up the fact that there's a push to map the Great Lakes bottom, and it's gone forward to legislation. Two congressional representatives from Michigan, Republican Lisa McClain and Debbie Dingell, they both introduced a Great Lakes Mapping Act. It would, according to earlier introduction, allocate $200 million to map the Great Lakes bottom by 2030. And it would direct the National Oceanographic Administration to conduct high-resolution mapping of the Great Lakes and to further understand the underwater environment of the Great Lakes. Did you hear what they had found in Lake Michigan?
What?
There's like eight big holes that they never knew about.
Oh, gosh.
And they had no idea what it was
about.
Don't
tell my husband that.
I mean, it's like, you know, X-Files kind of thing.
Yeah, like, where are they going?
Exactly. The last effort to map the Great Lakes came in the 1970s. The maps were largely created by using a single-beam sonar, but which is not anywhere near as technologically advanced as what we have now. The system produced maps covering about 15% of the coastal lake bottom areas, and with a single sounding every 500 meters. That's 550 yards. They were low resolution and could have missed sinkholes, canyons, and sand dunes and shipwrecks. And that's one of the other things I think they want to also be able to be aware of. That would allow, when they look at the Great Lakes, they're looking at having a much better image. And, of course, they also want to look at what's going on with erosion, the shifting sands, and giving navigators new depth findings that would be allowing for greater shipping safety. You know, and it is funny when you look at, prime example, what's going on in the Mississippi River. So those of you not familiar with it, there's a dredging process and a rebuild going on within the Mississippi River. And they're taking sand that has been sent down as sediment throughout the chain. If you look at different areas, the Minnesota River is a prime example that dumps into the Mississippi. And lots of sediment from those farmers' fields have dropped down, and a lot of it's sand, and they dredge. And they placed it on shorelines. Now what they're doing, they had a proposal, and it's been approved and funded. They're making islands to prevent the erosion or restore the island shapes that they were number of years ago before erosion and the sedimentation has taken place.
So interesting.
Yeah, and they've created walleye rearing areas, or wintering areas, I should say, within certain areas. They're closing off other through cuts that have been in certain areas that have caused a lot of backwater sedimentation. And when you look at the navigation aspect of what goes on in the Great Lakes, you don't really think about that as much. But what they really have in this side of it is they've got a lot of shipping that does go on that goes into ports of Milwaukee, ports of Chicago, and of course when you're looking at Lake Erie as well, the western areas not so much, except for the Maumee River, but the eastern areas, lots of shipping coming through. So, and to St. Marie. So
interesting.
Yeah, a lot of cool stuff, but they're going to do that mapping. And I know for a fact that, you know, a lot of the units out there today, you can do your own mapping. And that's kind of a fun thing. You can map.
You know, I'm just surprised it hasn't been done yet. But technology.
Again, it had been, but only 15% of it, and it was all the inshore.
Right.
So that's when they have discovered recently, I think it was 10 different sinkholes, or just they have no idea what they're, if they're thermal, meaning coming from a thermal aspect from under the floor of the Great Lakes. So kind of a cool different thing.
Mm-hmm.
Coming out of Michigan, this has been talked a lot about in the recent months. Hunting and fishing license fee increases. They have been proposed. The legislation was introduced late last year that would have increased the fees substantially, but it died in kind of the lame duck session. Gretchen Whitmer proposed a license fee increase in her state budget earlier in the month. The state senators, John Cherry and John Bumstead, Muskegon and Flint, introduced bipartisan legislation for fee increases. They started working on, the House did, working on its own version of fee increases as well. Current license fee structure hasn't changed in over 10 years. We haven't had a license fee change since 2014. You can imagine over the last 10 years with inflation, those license dollars don't stretch as far as they need to. And the Senate bills, they call for gradual increases that were proposed by the House last year. They were tied to future increases and incremental adjustments of the Consumer Price Index, which used to measure inflation. Current fees for some of the more popular licenses as follows are $25 for all species fishing. Base license is $10, single deer license $20, turkey $15, waterfall $12, and antlerless deer $20. For comparison, the budget would increase raise those fees following all species fishing $40 from $25, base license $17 from $10, single deer license $30 from $20, turkey $23 from $15, waterfall $18 from 12, and antlerless deer 30 from 20. And under this proposal, license fees would all be kind of moderated in that sense of the word. I'm not going to go through all of them, but it would be slightly less They would also maintain 60% senior discount, include 60% discount for youth on age 16 and under, and reduce the cost of Antler to list a license by 75% and set parameters on how they would be spent.
Some $2. Of those were big jumps, though.
I know, big
$10
big
more?
Like, I know. What? Well, some of them were 20, and it's like, what? $2 from each license would go to the Wildlife Management Public Education Fund. $2 from each license would also go to hunting and fishing recruitment, and $1 from each license to go to the Hunter Feeding Michigan Fund. Bill also requires state treasury to compensate DNR for the monies lost to the senior, youth, and antlerless license discounts. The Senate would also create a new complete license, which would cost $150 to include the base license, two deer licenses, one antlerless deer and all species fishing, spring and fall turkey, and waterfowl.
That's not bad.
No.
That would almost be like the better way to go.
Well, and, you know, it's like Minnesota. You know, you think, okay, I want to get a three-year, and I haven't found the three-year. I used to do the three-year license. Mm-hmm. I don't know what happened to it. Maybe it's my mistake. If you know that we still have one, let me know, and it'll be my mistake. But everyone else's learning curve that you can get a three-year license. That was usually the best, because usually you roll around February. Wait a minute. Do I need a license or not?
Yeah, because it's been 3 years, so you're like, how long has
it
been?
Wait a minute.
I don't remember.
Then you try and log on to the website and trying to
Remember your password.
Pull up your information. It's like, wait a minute. Is this me? Oh, okay. I'm good for another year.
Dude, I totally get it, though. I totally get it. When it's anything past a year, it's like,
well,
I can't remember if it's
that,
valid or not.
I get licenses in North Dakota, South Dakota, Wisconsin.
Yeah. You're
Michigan,
completely
and it's just,
on a different level.
It's a little crazy to remember which one's which. So anyway, well, thank you guys for joining us. And Ava, thank you.
Hey,
we certainly appreciate the time.
You know what? Just holding down the fort here.
I hope everybody has a fantastic weekend. I'm going fishing. I hope you are too. Really enjoy the outdoors, because it's going to be gorgeous. And be safe. We'll hope to talk to you next week. See ya.
Thanks for listening to the Valley Outdoors Radio, brought to you by Vexus Boats, building dreams with an unequaled passion for excellence. Catch us next week, same time, same place. Have a great day on the water or in the field.